Thursday, March 7th, and this is episode 2 of season 11 of Mind Body Evolution. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Eric. So I wanted to do something back into my normal evolution, human consciousness discussion, leave the cosmology behind for a little bit.
And that's funny, because I thought you were saying that the cosmology had you completely obsessed. You couldn't think about anything else.
Well, that was a time. That's what being ADHD is like. You find a topic, you get really deep into it, and then you move on to the next thing again.
Okay.
So this is why I love a podcast. I need new topics all the time, and
I dive into
them all the time.
And they're always fun. Keep
going.
Oh,
thank you. Well, so I wanted to talk about human sex this week. Not as, a how-to guide, but...
It's weird because we don't normally talk about it as human sex.
Well, indeed. And humans have some really unusual sex within the animal kingdom. We have giant brains. We're bipeds. We are tool users, and we can throw better than anything else. These are the things that make us human, and our sexual characteristics and behaviors are also equally unique. Mm-hmm. We often think about sex as somewhat animalistic and not human in some way. That is very, very wrong. Our sex is not like that of animals. And within animals, there's so much variety that you can't even pin down what that would even mean. And I wanted to start out again sort of emphasizing that when I talk about these things within biology, I tend to set up binaries because that's how I can talk about it. But that even within the purely biological world, these things are essentially constructs that we're describing within the species with a lot of variability.
I think we've touched on that.
We've touched on a couple different ways. Yeah. But I wanted to begin on sort of, what is sex? What's it for? How is it happening? So sex is a way to combine gametes for genetic variation. Gametes, eggs and sperm. Mm. So each one has half of the parent's genome, and then you mix them together to make a new mix and match that's half of each parent.
And this is in any species?
This is basically any species that has sex. Mm-hmm. Parthenogenesis aside.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just evolution trying to get the gametes together, and it doesn't care. So, an anglerfish, the female is huge and the male is an appendage. Other ones, the male is very dominant and the female is trying to woo the male. Generally, whoever does more of the work and caretaking gets to be the camouflaged one. The one that does the, sperm donation, which is very low cost, gets to be the flashy one. That's often how things are in the animal kingdom. So you've got the red cardinals with the brown females, etc. But there's also all sorts of different modes. So there's various kinds of more or less monogamy. There's a lot of cheating out there. Most species that mate for life have very high incidences of extra pair mating, as they call it.
Really?
And don't seem to make that big of a deal out of it. There's a lot of mate guarding, usually by males of females during mating season, but it's not always successful. And there's not a huge repercussions to it.
Mm-hmm.
If a female gets away with it, she gets away with it.
How does a female not get away with it?
The male pounces on them.
The male guards.
Rips the male away, other male away. So for example, they're in toads. When toads are mating, they're all calling at once, and there's this giant pile of toads. And each male is trying to climb on a female and do what's called amplexus, where he grabs her around the throat and pushes away with his back legs. And it's just sort of like a rugby scrum fighting for the females.
Mm.
And then it's pure male-male competition. Other times it's more of a male has to woo the female. And so you have mating calls and displays to, for a male bird to get a female bird. He has to do very fancy dances or have beautiful plumage as a way of attracting her. The perfect song, all these things. And that generally indicates that he's doing less effort. But even in those cases, the one I mentioned, a cardinal, the male has a lot of parental care. He just doesn't have to make eggs, which are way more expensive than sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still more cost for him, but he's going to be there bringing up the kids as well, and guarding the territory. So it's very much, he's still having to do a lot of work. But I wanted to mention the idea of sneaker males, because they're really interesting within the biological kingdom. Often when you have male-male competitions, the males are much larger than the females and will not tolerate any other male in the area. But because evolution really doesn't care about doing anything other than getting gametes together, there's other strategies. So smaller males will act like juveniles that are immature, have no male coloring, and then sneak up and mate with the females while the male isn't looking. And this is a really common thing among many, 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 many species.
Really? Sounds like you're talking about gorillas or something, but...
Frogs, fish...
really?
Yeah, yeah, across the board.
Wow.
Interesting versions of them will not just acting like a juvenile, but acting like a female. And that way the male welcomes them in. One of the more interesting examples of that is in the giant cuttlefish, which is, you know, a large, intelligent mollusk. So very far from our lineage. And they communicate with colors on their body. So, for example, a male trying to attract a female will have a particular color. A male... Mm-hmm. Being aggressive and trying to chase off another male will have an aggressive color. They actually look aggressive. There'll be bands of color washing over it, and, you know, very bright and aggressive. If there's a male and a female on either side of it, it'll have aggressive colors on one side and come love me colors on the other to the female. The female's communicating with her colors. A smaller male will assume the body shape and colors of a female and be welcomed in by the larger male, and then mate with the female directly underneath him, where he can't see.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's insane. So these are things that are fully part of the biological world, where there's you know, changes of sexual appearance and behaviors.
As subterfuge.
As part of a strategy. which then gets passed down genetically.
It sounds like such a complex strategy that it would involve. I mean, it's hardwired in. It's incredible.
I was just reading about wrasses, where as a wrasse matures, it'll actually change sexes.
I'm sorry, as a what?
I'm sorry, a kind of fish.
A wrasse.
A wrasse. Starts with a W.
W-R-A-S-S?
Yeah.
Never heard of this. Okay.
It could be an E on the end. I don't know.
Sure.
I can't spell.
Okay.
wrasse. Anyway. They're very colorful reef fishes, and they change sexes partway through their life. Some of them. Mm. And so they'll go from being a male to a female,
as
partway through their life. But they're also competing. The males are competing for the females, and they will, sometimes take on female shape while still being a male. so they can then sneak past the combative males and mate with the females. And what I was just reading is, they don't just change their color. They actually change their brain so that they have female stereotyped behaviors in their brains. So these sex changes are 100% except for the gametes. The gametes are the only thing that stay, with a little bit of behavior that allows the male and female to actually get together. So they're fully changing their body and then leaving their gonads, where others, males, are fully changing to female and changing their gonads. Yeah, that's what I meant, that it's the complete flexibility, and I'm still using it as a binary, male and female, but it is by no means a binary. These are just labels we are placing on the biological world. Mm. And so I wanted to make that really, really clear, and that I am pro messing with labels, but I'm using these labels. So I just wanted to talk about that as we're entering it. What do I mean by human sex is unique?
What do you mean by human sex is unique?
We have many of these same traits. We have male-male competition. We have display. Interestingly, we've reversed the display. Generally, females are the ones that get to wear the prettier clothes, mm-hmm. And displaying for males. And you know, why would that be? In biological systems where you see a, you know, bright, beautiful female bird and a drab brown male, it turns out it's the male that is then actually doing all of the mate guarding, and the female goes and lays eggs in several males' nests, and the males all have to take care of them. So, you know, purple gallinules, other birds like that. It's actually the female that's bright because the male ends up doing all the work. Mm-hmm. So for a long time in many, many societies, women have been dependent on men to bring them their resources so they can raise families. Mm-hmm. And so females have needed to be attractive for men for this reason. This is interesting because men still are slightly larger than females, implying male-male competition, actual physical mm-hmm. fighting occasionally. Otherwise, there's no reason to be larger. Mm-hmm. Size implies calories. Calories are a cost. There's a cost to being mm-hmm. larger. Bigger people die when there's a famine. So there's a risk to it as well. But it's worth the risk to be a little bit larger because you're more likely to succeed and find
pass
a mate
on the, yeah.
because you can beat up some other guy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it just comes right down to that. And there are there's evidence that, you know, women are attracted to taller men. So there is an actual preference there. Females presumably have had to do this since really the beginning of our genus. As soon as we began to get larger brains, the behaviors of females would have had to have changed as well as their appearance. And so this is what I'm talking about when I'm saying human sex is unique because of changing the normal roles where the female has to be more attractive than the male. That's not a normal way to go. It does happen in the animal world, but this is an unusual version of it. And the reason that is because the babies need so many calories mm-hmm. for their giant brains, and because they're so dependent. They can't move around because to have a giant brain, it has to be, you know, almost a quarter of their body when they're born. And so there's no way they're lifting their heads. Mm-hmm. You know, a baby can't touch its arms above its head.
Yeah.
Like its fingers, like if they held their arms straight up,
go over their head. Yeah,
Their head is gigantic. So, yeah. You know, that is not a creature that's going to be fending for itself anytime soon. So a mother is then tied down. You know, she might want to hunt, she might be able to hunt, but she can't go hunting while nursing an infant, and she mm-hmm. can't go hunting when she's 8 months pregnant. So she absolutely is dependent on calories coming from the male right from the beginning of our species. And it's defined by the way our species is. Because the brains couldn't be any bigger at all. To get smarter, we actually develop for several months out of the womb in a way that normal animals develop
inside the womb.
Yeah. So we have several months of post-gestational gestation, essentially. And this requires a lot of calories from the male.
And so complete dependence.
So right from the beginning, males have been necessary for the females and a vital portion of it. And so the females are the attractive ones. So before clothing, what were we doing? So females were developing breasts. They were developing buttocks and waist that were directly going to advertise their fertility. Mm-hmm. The fat that goes to breasts, buttocks, and waist are a dedicated fat in females. It's the first on and the last off. The only time it goes away is in the last trimester of pregnancy. There are hormone enzyme relationships that start dissolving this particular kind of fat, but then it's built back on right away as soon as you're done really with the early nursing. So this is the first fat on, the last fat off, because it's the one that's most attractive, and it's the one to men, and mm-hmm. it's the one that evolution cares about the most. Mm-hmm. And evolution does not care that women care.
And you're saying that it's the most attractive to men because it advertises fertility.
It advertises fertility. And so, you know, no other primate has breasts. No other primate has the buttocks and waist of a human female. That mm-hmm. kind of, you know, very large, voluptuous shape mm-hmm. is directly related to male attractiveness. And what I was saying, but it doesn't care. Evolution doesn't care about what the female thinks about it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't care if she makes a choice or not. As long as the man's attracted to her, mm-hmm. then she's going to get pregnant. Now, after that, she has to keep the man attracted. Again, this is building into stereotypes of gender. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. but this is how the strategies are mm-hmm. built into the mm-hmm. way things work. So she needs to stay attractive to the man.
So that the calories keep coming.
And so...
And the baby survives.
Other organisms, you know, even in our lineage, chimpanzees will do all sorts of alignments with different males, sometimes exchanging small amounts of meat for sex later. So this is already in our lineage.
I think we've talked about this. In,
yeah, we did talk about this.
Season, yeah.
But it became more accentuated when we started eating more meat because our environment was producing fewer easy to gather mm-hmm. calories. We mm-hmm. started turning towards meat to feed our giant brains, mm-hmm. which allowed us to make the tools, which allowed us to get more meat. All of this required...
And then the marrow.
Women being attractive 24/7, essentially. And so in chimpanzees, when they're going into estrus, there's this huge sexual swelling. It's like a pink grapefruit sticking out behind them. And human females do not do that. It is really hard to look at a human female and know if she's ovulating or not.
Right.
And that's intentional. So she's always advertising fertility and attraction, even when it's essentially a lie. Now, we do know. It's really interesting. The both hormones and pheromones are something that is influencing our behavior all the time and influencing our behaviors with each other. So we can... There is a slight preference for an ovulating woman by a man. If you look at hundreds of pictures and rate them, the ones who are ovulating will have a slight increase in the bell curve.
Even though we don't know, we know.
So generally when you're ovulating, your hair is going to be a little thicker, a little glossier. But the same thing's true in early pregnancy. Probably for the same reason. You're extra attractive when in early pregnancy. I don't know if those have been put into the, you know, rating things. These sound like, you know, frat boys outside, you know, holding up things.
I'm sure these things have been tested. We have to look this up. This just sounds like something that...
But yeah, the idea is that we do know a little bit, but it's minor. And it can be done two different ways.
I know many women, including my wife, who will look at a woman and be like, she's pregnant. And I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
And of course she's right.
And yeah, it's usually the thicker hair and the sort of rounder cheeks. It fills in a little bit more. But the idea of, sorry, you distracted me.
Sorry.
the idea of being able to rate women by their ovulation is something that can be done both visually and by pheromones. Mm-hmm. So if you have just pictures, men will statistically tend to choose the women who are ovulating. But if you show the same pictures and then have swipes from underarms and have men smelling it while they're looking at the pictures, they'll rate the ones highest that they smelled with the underarm smell from an ovulating woman. So we do know. We are animals. We are responding to these things, but it's not very conscious. But it is definitely part of our dance among each other of sexual attraction and how we're relating
to
each other.
So even though a woman doesn't end up having a giant bulbous red protrusion, there's still an advertisement. Even if it's not,
it's subtle, and it's probably purposely subtle. It's based on things that the male would really like to know. Mm-hmm. So we're probably really good at it, and the mm-hmm. female would really like you to not know. And so mm-hmm. she's really good at hiding it mm-hmm. or pretending to be that way. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, all of our cosmetics
and none of this is ever happening on a conscious level.
None of this is ever happening on a conscious level. All of these things spoof it. The perfumes are based on sex pheromones that we're modifying, you know, from flowers that modified mm-hmm. sex pheromones to attract insects. Mm-hmm. All of these things, you know, the redder cheeks, all of these things are imitating, the look of sexual anticipation and the smells of sexual attraction.
But you're saying in most of the animal kingdom, this kind of flamboyance is on the male. And
it's absolutely on the male. Yeah. And so the female would then accept or reject. Now, the way we tend to do it, before internet dating, bars worked a lot like a lek. A lek is a place that males go to congregate and show off, and then the females go and choose the male that's the best one. Example, prairie chickens, etc. The way bars worked, not that I know from firsthand experience, but this is something that I have read about, is that usually a woman would make the first move. So she would look at a guy and then look back and then, you know, go back to talking to her friends or whatever. And that was the opening move. And then it was up to the male to come to her. So she was displaying and doing her display. And the male would then come to her and choose her and, you know, may I buy you a drink? That sort of thing. and so this was basically a lecking display. Females going to a place to display and then the males coming to them. And so that is also sort of, you know, part of the way we are working in this. I'm sure.
I think we're just too old. I think it still happens. I
mean, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know,
internet has definitely affected things, but it still happens, I'm sure.
It's interesting to think about how, you know, all of these games are being played in manipulation and attractiveness and the desire to, you know, pass things on. But it goes beyond just women developing breasts. Men have unique traits within the primates as well. So all the carnivores and all of the primates have a bone in their penis called a baculum. Mm. And you could imagine how this would be useful evolutionarily. Erections are a lot easier if there's a bone right through the middle of the penis.
Just whenever you want it, boom, there
yeah,
you go.
You're ready to go. Humans do not have one.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting to me because what does this mean? It means
evolutionarily, what does this mean?
What does this mean evolutionarily? It's not necessarily in the guy's favor because he might not be ready when the woman is ready. He can't just do it because there's no bone there.
Mm-hmm.
So to successfully mate, mm-hmm. the woman needs to in some way entice the male.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's putting the attractiveness onto the female because if she can't turn him on, mm-hmm. that means that's not good genes on her part. She's not going to keep attracting him. Now, I mentioned that the woman has to be attractive at the beginning, obviously,
mm-hmm.
But then she has to keep him attracted so he sticks around mm-hmm. and provides more calories.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that men not being able to get erections mm-hmm. is actually a evolutionary strategy so that women are being forced essentially to seduce men. And that is part of the...
You mean men not walking around with a bone in their penis, making it so that they always
just
have
ready
an
to
erection,
go anytime? Yeah,
is
an evolutionary strategy
right.
that is not necessarily in the male's genes' favor. So it's in the favor of the offspring. So therefore, it's in the favor of the female because if her offspring are benefited, then she's benefited.
Right. This is all to ensure that the male will continue to be
exactly.
there so that the offspring can survive.
Right. But there's clearly some cost to the male. If you were the one male with a bone in your penis, you'd be more likely to have more offspring out there. But if a female is not needed to seduce you, essentially, you're less likely to then take care of the offspring.
Mm-hmm.
So there might even be some cost to the male, but it's, I think, mostly, might even be some benefit to the male, but I think it's mostly a cost to the male in favor of the female's progeny because
right.
her progeny are then going to have more resources.
Yeah, I mean, this evolutionarily seems to be placing the decision of whether these genes continue on the female.
It puts a lot more on the female,
right.
Exactly.
The female is deciding, is this attraction going to work?
Yeah, yeah.
If not, moving on.
Yeah, there's one more unique trait in males.
Because the man will almost always just go through with it.
Yeah, if he can.
If he can, exactly. That's the
yeah.
right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other thing is somewhat related. Every member of the primates, or almost every member of the primates, and I think every member of the carnivora, have penis spines. Now, they range from the nasty...
Spines?
Spines, yes. They range from the nasty to the sort of bumpy, nubbly, sort of French tickler kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So cats, for example, have backward pointing spines on their penis, which explains why cats are so strange. The entire when you're petting a cat, mm-hmm. you are communicating with it in many weird ways. When you pet it on the top of your head, of its head, you are saying you are dominant and it is a kitten. When you pet it on the side of its head, you are saying it is dominant and it's marking you as territory. When it, because its scent marks are behind the eyes. Oh. When you pet it down its back and it raises its butt in the air, it's saying, yes, mate with me. Even if it's a male. So again, these behaviors can be stereotyped as female behaviors, but have nothing to do with the gender of, or sex, I don't know which one's which sometimes, of the actual animal. So again, you know, evolution doesn't care. It's using stereotype behaviors to do different kinds of communication. Now, the reason your cat will stick its butt in the air and then enjoy the petting and then turn around and bite you is because what a male cat does, when a female is sticking its butt in her air, in the air and she's in heat, it will sort of press down and trod her and press down. That's also related to the nursing reaction. When kittens are nursing, they're going to press and knead on the mother's belly while they're nursing. That's very similar kind of stuff, but it'll be pressing down on the female. So it's taking one stereotype behavior, changing it slightly into another stereotype behavior. Then the male will start mating with her, but he's got backward pointing spines. And so while she really wants it, she also really doesn't want it, and it's painful. And so then the next thing that happens is she screams and swipes at him and tells him to get out of there. And so built into the entire attractiveness of cats is I hate you. And so they're right from the, you know, very like nature of their soul. They are both, I love you, come to me, and go away, I hate you, you hurt me. So anyway, that's just built into a lot of the way sex is. It's strange in many animals. In humans, it's very specifically, designed to make males less sexually responsive is the general theory. So these hairs are, each one has a dedicated nerve.
Hairs?
And
what
the,
hairs?
The spines. And so so they're sometimes called neural spines. So
talking about a
penis
okay.
spine. Yeah.
Okay.
So on a chimpanzee or a gorilla, there are going to be these small, nubbly, little, like, hairy, spiny things. They're made of hair. Each one connected to a group of neurons that stimulate the male really strongly every time that hair gets brushed. And so the males basically reach orgasm in seconds. Mm. And then basically immediately do it again. And so it might have sex 30, 40 times in an hour. Mm-hmm. Helps if you have a penis bone. And the spines make it really, really quick. Mm-hmm. So both of these things have been removed in human males. Mm-hmm. And so clearly there's some sort of evolutionary advantage to males both not having easy erections and having a really long time until having an orgasm. Mm. And so there's definitely something to do with pair bonding. We enjoy sex and the females enjoy sex. Mm-hmm. We're not like cats. They don't hate us for it while still desiring. So there's this is absolutely when these pair bonds are being formed. Now, we mate for life, but not the way other things mate for life. The female attitudes towards cheating, I think, are closer to what other mating for life organisms are towards cheating. But males' attitudes towards cheating, we are psycho people. We will stalk a female we're interested in. We'll get incredibly jealous if any other male comes near her. If it's really not unusual in many cultures for if a female gets caught cheating, she gets killed.
So you're saying this isn't a cultural thing. You're saying this is a societal thing. You're saying this is a species
thing.
This
is a species thing. Absolutely. Because think about it. If a female is carrying another male's child and you need all of those calories for that big brain, that is a tremendous cost on the male. The same reason that male is not the pretty one, mm-hmm. because he's doing a lot of work. It's going to be the same thing if he's trying to bring up someone else's child. Mm-hmm. So the overall cost is tremendously high for a male if he catches a if he's actually bringing up a someone else's baby. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that while cheating has always happened in society and is fairly common, somewhere around 20% of couples there's cheating, the rate of actual babies is extremely low and has always been so. And so what you can do is look at lineages and then do DNA testing. And not just look at, you know, paternity tests for the immediate father, but you can figure out through an entire lineage if the people are related to the family. So you look at a family and you look, and it turns out it's very, very uncommon for there ever to be someone else's baby. So even though there's always been cheating in society, it's been very, very rare for a pair bonded couple, whatever you want to call that marriage, for the female to have someone else's baby
and follow through with it.
And have the male then raise it. Now, the females are still attractive and she's going to be very, very interested in getting a guy after she's had a baby possibly. So males will sometimes be with someone who's already had a child. That happens. But they're generally going to be looking for someone who doesn't have a kid. That's how dating is today. But it is not impossible. But a female with a baby, if she can find a male, then she has a pair and she will still be attractive to him. And that presumably would be working somewhat hard for that.
And the reason that this isn't this way in the rest of the animal kingdom is presumably what you're saying is that in most of the rest of the animal kingdom, the mother can have the baby and then the baby can just like climb on the back or grab onto the belly and then the mother can just keep going.
Yeah, so there's much less parental investment necessary.
Right.
Even in a cardinal where the male is helping take care of it, he's the bright one because he doesn't have to make an egg. That egg is so difficult. Mm-hmm. Now, we know how hard making a baby is for a female. Mm-hmm. So that just implies the need for the male. It might not even be that the male is necessarily doing more work. It's just that she cannot reproduce without his help. So she's stuck. And it might not be, you know, if you think about what being pregnant is like as a male, I could imagine it, let's say, and what being male is like in comparison, it seems like being pregnant is way harder than the male's job in that.
It really does.
It really does. So why does the female then need to be the attractive one? Again, it's because she can't reproduce at all without the male providing some calories.
Right. And before we had, you know, contemporary society.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was not a situation where that child could then climb on the mother's back and the mother could go out hunting or gathering.
Right. I have mentioned before that the Scythians, because they're such an interesting sort of counterexample, when you put a woman on a horse and give her a bow, she's absolutely equal of a male. Mm-hmm. Particularly if she's had training, she might not be able to draw the bow as far, but she's probably lighter and faster on the horse.
Right. And just as accurate.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the things balance out and, you know, it turns out that a third of the Scythian martial graves are female skeletons. Mm-hmm. And so this was something that was, you know, very prominent in this society because of the way culture had adapted in that particular society. And because they're matrilineal societies, they assumably would have had groups that could have done the raising of the offspring without the need for the man to be doing all the providing. Mm-hmm. You know, once you're on a horse, you can go ride down something and you can have your sister do it while you're nursing.
Right.
But the point is
still you need help. If you've just had
a baby, absolutely need help. And so
And again, you're also saying that this comes from our giant brains.
Like it comes directly to the giant brains. It's what makes us what we are. So just in the same way that women have beautiful breasts, men have smooth penises without spines all over them and no bone inside it.
Right.
You know, these are specifically human adaptations.
All of these things make it so that we can keep having these giant brains.
Giant brain babies,
Have dominion over over the planet.
As they say, yeah. We are certainly part of the planet and we sort of forget that sometimes, but that's a different show.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to talk about that and introduce it as a concept, like on an anatomical level, why our sex is just so different. Oh, we didn't talk about penis size.
Okay.
You know, men are very excited about their penis size, but it's directly related to, again, the giant brains, because the vagina has to be bigger for the birth canal to be able to have a brain. So to match the two, human males have unusually large penises.
You mean compared to the rest of the animal kingdom?
And certainly compared to chimpanzees and and gorillas. There are other things out there, you know, whales have giant prehensile penises because they're like a, you know, like they're like a midair refueling for a bomber. You know, they have to like go side by side. The you know, penis has its own little sort of veins on it that help it locate, and it's prehensile. I think the largest penis to body size of any animal is the, of course, it's the Lake Titicaca duck. And it's I think it's longer than their body length. Again, it's one of those sort of, they have to do a, make things work in a complex situation. But within the primates, human males have very, very large penises. Are, I think I mentioned this when I was talking about mating systems, our testicles are unusually small, unusually large, but not incredibly large. Because we do have some sperm competition. So again, in addition to male-male competition, occasionally probably in unsavory situations like an invading army kind of thing, frequently males will mate with the same female within a 24-hour period of time. And then whoever produces the most sperm is most likely to impregnate the woman. This is extremely rare in pair bonded situations. You don't normally have multiple males with a female. There's I think one culture in Tibet where there are multiple males with a female, but almost all polygamy is multiple females to a male. But with sperm competition, you need larger testicles. So males' testicles are, say, larger than a gorilla's, but much smaller than a chimpanzee, because when a female moves into a what they call a male bonded society, they're all brothers essentially. When the female moves in, every brother is going to have sex with the female.
Yes, we have mentioned this before.
Exactly. And so they have really large testicles in comparison to human males. So we're intermediate between them. And it just, you know, it's interesting to think about how we are different than other creatures in terms of almost every other creature out there. Our penis and testicles are on the large side, which I guess would be nice. But it's bizarre. You know, they are hanging it right out there. The other primates are somewhat like that, but with a, you know, larger penis and testicles, it's very obvious. So it's probably something that was part of the mating situation. But as far as I know, no one's ever been happy about getting a penis pic. Whereas, you know, pictures of naked women, I've never heard anyone really complain about it. And so, you know, you can see the differences in between attraction right there. So that even though males have these unique pieces of anatomy that individually we might be proud of, aesthetically as a species, that we never really have.
But it's interesting. You're now positing a reason why this is something that males should be proud of. Because evolution is trying to get us larger and larger.
Yeah, and I don't know. I haven't seen any studies of female attractiveness to penis size. But my guess is that it doesn't figure very large, so to speak. I have heard from students whose husbands are urologists that there is actually a need for compatibility between male penis size and female vagina size. But I don't think it comes up very often, given that most babies are way bigger than a penis. So it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't really figure in the end.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to put some of those ideas out there and talk about why we're unique.
Yeah, fascinating. Also, that brings together many of the concepts that we've been talking about. So in the past. So that was very, very interesting.
All right.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Hey, folks, www.mindbodyevolution.info. Check out the website. Take it easy.